Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Come November, or if you vote absentee, as soon as mid-October, you will have four ballot initiatives on which to cast your vote. Two are Hawaii County Charter Amendments. One talks about the County Salary Commission and whether they should take public input. The other county charter amendment would require any charter amendments to include financial impact, revenues, expenditures, taxes, and fiscal liabilities. You will also vote on two state questions. One is an amendment to the state constitution that will ask, quote, shall the legislature be authorized to establish, as provided by law, a surcharge on investment real property to be used to support public education? It's a pretty general statement that allows the state to start levying property taxes, something new for them, that we'll explore in more detail Thursday, next Thursday the 27th at Ark of Hilo, 1099 Wainui Nui Avenue from 4:30 p.m. to 6, and you're invited. And we'll explore it at West Hawaii Civic Center on Wednesday, October 3rd from 6 p.m. to 8, and it will also be the topic of the Waimea Town Meeting on Thursday, October 4th. But today, we are going to address the state ballot question that says this, quote, shall there be a convention to propose a revision of or amendments to the state constitution? To talk about that, I'm joined by Peter Adler. Good morning. Aloha, Peter.
Hi, Sherry. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm really glad you're here. And just so the listeners know, Peter is a consultant now back in Hawaii after 10 years as president of the independent think tank and consulting firm, the Keystone Center in Colorado. Peter has a long history of collaborative projects and problem solving in Hawaii, including water management, resource planning, land planning, marine and coastal issues, and many more. Peter Adler has held executive positions with the Hawaii Justice Foundation, the Hawaii Supreme Court's Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, and the Neighborhood Justice Center. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in India. He was an instructor and associate director of the Hawaii-bound school and president of the Society of Professionals in Dispute Resolution. Peter Adler is well-published and well-respected. So, Peter, thank you so much for taking time to share your mana'o with us about this really tricky, complex issue.
Thanks for those kind comments.
Well,
I wish you'd tell my family.
I will let them know immediately. Now, this question about whether to have or not to have a constitutional convention is now going to be on our ballot. Why is this question on the ballot now?
So, at any time in the course of 9 years, the legislature can initiate a ballot question like this and say, should there be revisions to the Constitution? Should we have a convention? If they don't do it, then it comes automatically on every 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So we're in the 10th year and it's on the ballot.
Well, you say it's the 10th year, but when is the last time we actually had a constitutional convention?
1978.
So 40 years ago.
It was. And that was a big one. That was a very important one.
Well, tell us, what is a constitutional convention?
In short, it's an opportunity for citizens to get elected as delegates and come together and gather and review the Constitution and come in with proposed changes. And if they do come up with that, they have to come back to the voters and vote on those amendments.
Okay, so you said it's an opportunity for citizens to come together. Where do these people come from who then become, I'll use the term, delegates to a constitutional convention?
Anybody who's of age and anybody who's a citizen of the state can run for to be a delegate. So it's an open field. And typically, you know, the citizens will come from all different corners on this stuff. But it's open to anybody to run, but they have to be a citizen and they have to be of age.
Do the delegates, well, I realize we only have 1978 really to look at, after the 1959 initiation of our Constitution.
68, too, there was a convention.
Okay, so 59, then 68, then 78. But it's been a long time. So back in 78, were the delegates mostly state legislators or lawyers, or who were they?
Interestingly, not so much. The newspapers at the time, Advertiser and the Star Bulletin, what is now the Star Advertiser, ran a series of editorials saying we really like to have one and we would like to have citizens instead of existing politicians. So there were a few, but not many. That, of course, could change.
Okay. So if the voters say yes to a constitutional convention, actually, let me take a step back. I'm going to get my ballot, and it's going to have that question on it. And the question is, shall there be a convention to propose a revision of or amendments to the state constitution? What if I am so confused I don't vote at all?
It's going to count as a no. The threshold is that 50% plus one have to approve having a convention. But if there's a damaged ballot or people don't vote on those issues, they count as no's if they're blanks.
I'm just curious. Why is that? Because it seems like it's a little unfair to just count somebody's vote as no if they didn't actually vote no.
Well, I think part of the history, as I understand it, is in 1978, the convention delegates were young lawyers out of the Richardson Law School. And really, and that was a time of environmental ferment, a time of cultural upheaval, objections against the war. And they ran and they were enthused. And after that, a lot of the standing politicians viewed that as a runaway delegation or as a runaway convention. So they changed it and they raised the bar. And that was one of the ways they raised it.
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm just curious. If there is to be a constitutional convention in the future, could they then change that? Is that how that process would occur? If you want to change that so a blank vote does not count as a no?
It could. It could, but it won't happen this time.
Okay.
It won't
happen
this time.
Right, for this, meaning we have to vote yes or no.
Yeah, the rules of the road are clear right now.
Okay. So if the voters do say yes, I understand it's then up to the state legislature to essentially make the rules. So why don't you tell us what will happen if there is a yes vote?
So there's actually three prospective votes. The first one is whether or not there will be a convention. The second one is the election of delegates. And then the third one is putting up on the ballot any proposed amendments. And each of those has, you know, those have a high bar. But the legislature, if the voters approve it on November 6th, the legislature actually then sets a lot of the parameters of what's going to happen. They allocate the funds for it. They determine how long it will be. They determine how many will sit, because it could be 102, 51, or 25. 25 is senatorial districts. 51, you know, could... I mean, so it that the numbers get determined by them. And the pay, how much delegates are paid, and per diems, and those kinds of things.
Interesting. So just out of curiosity, in 1978, how many delegates were there?
102.
102. And how'd they come up with that number?
I think, if I remember right, that's the number of districts and total representation. So, and the costs of that were very interesting. People want to know, what did that cost? The legislature allocated $2.5 million for this. The actual costs of the convention were $2
million. Oh.
There was another $500,000 in a lot of back office support. You have to rent facilities and run, you know, there's a lot of publication that goes on. So that was the cost in 78.
You know, I know you've done a lot of study of this. I'm curious to know whether your opinion is that $2 million or $2.5 million is a lot of money or a fair amount of money. I mean, you know, to average people, $2.5 million sounds like a lot of money. But then again, this is a big deal to amend the Constitution.
It's a very big deal.
Is that a reasonable amount?
Yes. Remember, we have a $7 billion state budget. So
$7 billion.
$7 billion state budget.
Okay.
So, you know, in proportion to the total cost of running the state, it's not that much. Estimates for the next one have ranged between, you know, 7 and 11 million, although there's some estimates that take it up to 40 plus. So I personally don't think it's going to be 40 plus unless they really do something luxurious and exotic. And lots of things go into that, figuring those costs.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How can you possibly predict? So give us some idea of what would make the difference in the cost. I don't want to have this whole discussion be about cost, but
right. It's
interesting, though, because people do sometimes make voting decisions based on cost. And interestingly, when I posted on the Lava 105 Facebook page that we were going to be doing this interview, one person wrote in and said, well, I lived in New York and they had one and it was hugely expensive. So tell us about that.
It doesn't have to be. So there's scenario cost figures. If we were sitting down here and really working out some spreadsheets and making calculations, one is the number of delegates. Well, will it be 25, 51, or 102? Second is the duration of the CONCON. And there's some parameters in which they have to have a convention done if it's approved.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you and ask you a silly question. How do they possibly know how long a convention should last? There's so many issues that could be brought up.
Well, one of the ways that they do that is they determine the amount of compensation for delegates, and they spread it out. So if they could say, we're going to pay for 4 weeks, or we're going to pay for 3 weeks, or we're going to pay for 6 weeks. But it also has to meet certain deadlines that are statutorily in place. so you can get the amendments onto the next ballot.
Ah, so that's a good point. So I interrupted you. I interrupted you in cost. So finish cost, and then we'll talk deadlines.
So it's the delegate compensation is another one. Do they get paid the same as legislators do? Do they get paid something different? So that has to be sorted out.
And, of course, they're only paid for the time they're doing
this? Right.
Okay.
That's right. Per diems.
It's like a month or 2 months or whatever.
Right. Yeah, so they're getting paid as a delegate because they're on official business. But they're going to set that compensation. The legislature will set that compensation. And then there's per diems. You know, the cost of flying people in from neighbor island delegations and what expenses out of pockets are going to get covered. There's the number of paid staff. There's usually staff that are assigned to this. And delegates may have access, usually do have access to some staff support. How many? We don't know.
Where does that staff come from? Is that existing like with the Attorney General's office
probably,
or people like that?
Yeah, probably. Or the Legislative Reference Bureau. Somebody will set that up, and I don't know exactly who will make those
appointments. Okay, but somebody who knows what they're talking about, somebody who knows how a legislative process should run. Okay,
absolutely.
Good.
And then there's the cost of facilities and the venue. So if, for example, they say we're going to have to go to the convention center, that's a big expense. If they say, no, we'll hold it in a state facility or in the Capitol during off time. So that, and the last time it was in the old federal building, in the old post office building in Honolulu. So they didn't pay that much for it. So lots of choices that will drive the costs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Peter Adler, you mentioned timelines. We're going to vote on this on November 6th. So we'll know the results by November 7th. What happens then? What's the timeline we're talking about?
So then the next legislature in 2019 will do these determinations on the numbers of delegates, the length, the time, the compensation. That'll happen in the next session.
Okay, and they would go into that session to discuss this constitutional convention in January of 2019.
Yes.
And that session ends roughly in May, mid-May.
That's right.
So they got to do it then.
Yes, but the convention itself probably wouldn't take place until the spring of 2020. You know, it would take a while to get it all put together.
Okay, so when would we vote on these delegates and give us a sense of that? So the legislature makes some determinations in the first part of 2019.
That would happen in the spring of 2020. In other words, the determinations of how long and when and where and who, they might happen in the session or it might happen immediately after the session. But by 2020, in the spring, there will be, these decisions will have been made. Then the convention itself would convene at least 5 months before the 2020 general election.
So 5 months before the 2020. Let me go back to one point, which is, when would the election be for the delegates? Like, would they have to do a special election, I assume?
Well, therein lies an interesting question, whether they do a special election or whether they put it on with a regular ballot.
So they could do it in November of 2019.
That's right.
Because
then you wouldn't have the convention until 2020.
Right, because you really couldn't wait until November of 2020 to have the election of delegates. So you would have to do a special election of some kind between the end of the legislative session in 2019 and sometime in 2020.
So one of these questions is whether all of this is integrated with the general elections or whether there are special elections. Special elections cost more.
Well, they do. And we don't have an election year in 2019.
That's right.
It's 2020.
Yeah.
So when does this constitutional convention, if people vote yes this November, when does it have to happen by?
It would have to happen at least 5 months before the general election that would be in 2020.
So 5 months before, let's say, November 6th.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And then they would have to. The convention has to adjourn at least 30 days before the general election so they can post the proposed amendments.
So we're looking at the convention really has to be done by May of 2020.
That's right.
As I calculate it.
That's right.
Because then we have June, July, August, September, October. That's 5 months. Did you say 5 months before the general election or six?
And then, five. No, five.
Okay.
And then the proposed amendments, if they come out, presumably they would, have to happen by November 3rd. Those have to be proposed in 2020. So that's where the three votes. The first one is the whether there will be one or not.
And that's coming up in November, this November 6th.
That's right.
Okay.
And then if it's a go, then there'll be an election of delegates and some decision pathways on that. And then the actual amendments would have to come to the voters to get approved. It's a complicated story.
It's complicated and also sounds like the process necessarily ends up being rushed. That's just my sense of it. Because the state legislature decides in 2019, but you don't have an election right away. And then once you have an election, you have to, as you say, complete the Constitutional Convention by, let's say, the 1st of May to be able to get it on. Wow.
And there's, you know, inevitably, there, because these are big questions, big political questions, there'll be a lot of politicking around this. So it's going to compress it. If it goes, it's going to be quite an interesting moment.
And it will. And right now, I just wanted to remind you that you're listening to Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken, your host and producer. Island Issues is on the radio on Hawaii Island every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, and then is posted as a podcast to lava1053.com and to koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Today, we're talking with consultant Peter Adler about the question that we're going to vote on in the next election, which is November 6th, or sooner if you get absentee, which is more or less, should we have a constitutional convention to amend the state constitution? The last one was in 1978, so it's been 40 years, and we're discussing pros and cons. In addition to the candidates that are on the general election ballot on November 6th, there are two county charter amendments, and there is one additional constitutional amendment to the state constitution, a question about whether we should amend the constitution to allow the state to tax certain real properties, a power that is currently limited only to the counties. And that's going to be discussed at forums on this coming Thursday, the 27th, Arc of Hilo, 4:30 to 6, and at West Hawaii Civic Center Council Chambers, Wednesday, October 3rd, 6 p.m. to 8, and at Waimea Town Meeting on Thursday, October 4th. Next Sunday morning, my guests are the two candidates running for County Council 7, the only county council race yet to be decided, Rebecca Villegas and Kelly Drysdale. In upcoming weeks, I'll be airing a couple of interviews with scientists from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, which I'm recording later this week. That should be really fun. And County Prosecutor Mitch Roth. Let's get back to Peter Adler, consultant. We're talking about a constitutional convention. The last one in 1978. Give us a sense as to what some of the key amendments that came out of that were. I believe there was many, like 35 or something in that neighborhood.
It was big. It was very big.
And you don't have to tell us every one, but give us a sense of the kinds of things that could that did happen then.
Some of those things were, for example, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs was created out of that convention. The Water Code and the Water Commission were created out of that. The designation of important agricultural lands was a result of that. So there were a lot of important things that took place. The interesting thing going into it was that there was a very huge issue that was rattling around in the public and in the newspapers. It was initiative, referendum, and recall. And everybody thought that was going to be the big issue. And it lost, you know, narrowly is my recollection.
Well, what is that issue? Tell us.
Initiative allows voters under, you know, to do what they do in California, which is to put a proposition on the ballot that says, you know, we want to have more taxes or less taxes or school taxes or whatever it might be. And we can see what's happened in California. That's been kind of complicated.
So that's where Proposition 13 in California came from, I believe.
That's exactly
right. And Proposition 13 had to do with if I own my home, then I maintain the original value of it with a very small increase.
Yeah. Sort of. And so these ballot initiatives create a lot of turmoil in the political system. And that's, I think, part of the reason why people consider voting against those. People who want to see more activist citizens and say we need more opportunity to get in the game, they would say we like it.
Well, we want it. So here's an opinion thing, and somebody had asked me this. The Constitutional Convention, if it happens, could cause changes in how the legislature is supposed to work. Am I correct about that?
You're absolutely correct about that.
So some say that even if the voters say, yes, I want a constitutional convention, the legislators could make the conditions, the Constitutional Convention itself, since they make the decisions, they could make it a real challenge to get it done because they might be concerned about reform that would give them a little less power. What are your comments, thoughts about that?
I've been talking to a lot of people, run a bunch of study groups and meetings, all of this because I myself have been very ambivalent about the whole thing, and I will probably make my decision on November 5th at midnight or something like that. So I've been collecting up a lot of the issues that could come on the table. And some of these are about how state government functions. Some of these are about how counties function. Some of these are about social issues. I'll give you some examples. So, for example, you could easily imagine the gut and replace, which has been rattling around. That could get overridden if the legislature doesn't do something, the Constitutional Convention could.
And let me just explain what that is.
Yeah.
Is a bill will come before the legislature, it has testimony, and everybody gives their input, and then it is approved in some form and goes into this mysterious committee in the legislature, which apparently, well, not apparently, they do have the power to completely take out the content of the bill itself, gut it, and replace it with something that may be marginally related and completely changes the intent. That's gut and replace, if I've explained
that's
it.
That's right.
Okay.
And so a constitutional convention could say, we're going to take that out. We're not going to allow that. They could, for example, say we're going to set term limits for elected office. They could say we're going to have we're going to add certain powers to the lieutenant governor's office. Lieutenant governor doesn't have a lot of enumerated responsibilities. You could require plain English financial reports. You could say we want to strengthen the public's right to know. So there's lots of state issues. There's a lot of county issues that could come on the table.
Like?
More home rule taxing authorities for the counties. Counties are very dependent on property taxes, which plays into one of the other issues on the ballot. It could say we want to allow counties to have more say in agriculture. That was a big issue on Kauai and on Maui. I think one of the issues that could come on the table is the creation of political subdivisions below the county level. In other words, we're the only state in the country that doesn't have anything like that. We have no municipalities of, you know, that are politically sanctioned. So I can imagine somebody raising those kinds of issues. So I think there's state-county functions and how they interact could come on the table. And again, these are ones that I've heard. How voting functions, automatic voter registration, all mail-in voting, ranked choice, you know, runoffs, that kind of stuff, where the top two or three have a runoff. So there's lots of things that could be looked at, and it all depends on what proposals are brought by the delegates.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because a lot of these issues have been bandied about at the legislature. Voting by mail is a perfect example of something that has been proposed numerous times, and they're doing a trial of all mail on Kauai, but no place else. Yet it's something that's really worked effectively in some states like Oregon.
Yeah, and I think that there are other issues. For example, how public education functions.
Oh, yeah.
Right? How about fuller autonomy for the university system? How about decentralization of school boards? So we're not just a state system, but we have something below. So I think a lot of these issues would come up. It just depends who's motivated to bring what possible changes on the table. One of the things I think I've learned in this odyssey that I've been, this walkabout that I've been doing on this issue, is that a lot of these are issues that the legislature could do themselves. So part of the function of a constitutional convention is to override the legislature. When they don't do stuff, the citizens can say, here's our way to do it.
Now, that's interesting. And that's what I mean. Some of the issues that you brought up are things that have been proposed at the state legislature. They don't seem to go anywhere, and they sometimes don't get a lot of discussion. Now, those are some things that could happen. You know, there's some people who are apparently firmly yes and some people who are apparently firmly no. What are people concerned about? Why would they not want to have a constitutional convention?
This is a great question, Jerry. It's a really good question. And it's one I've been particularly interested in. I ran these three meetings of volunteers as a study group. We spent a total of 8 hours or so meeting and talking. And we agreed in our study group that we would never try to persuade anybody else one way or the other. We'd study it. So a lot of the information I've gathered comes out of our investigation.
And I'd like to point out to anybody that you can read some really great articles in Civil Beat. It's online, civilbeat.com, which is, in case you don't know Civil Beat, it's an online newspaper funded by Pierre Omidyar, who founded eBay, and they do excellent reporting. And Civil Beat, which, by the way, just so you know, has come out in favor of a constitutional convention. They have editorialized on that. They have printed three great articles by Peter and your colleague, just talking about the things you talked about with these teams, with
right.
these folks. So
it was a very interesting yeah. set of meetings. So I think there's a kind of a yin and yang around this. So there's high hopes on the one side by some folks and dark fears by others.
That sounds to capture it well.
and the high hopes run something like, this is an opportunity for new ideas and going over the legislature's head if they, you know, fail to move in the way that the social directions are pushing. It could rekindle more citizen participation. It could reaffirm old values of who we are as a people and as a state. One of the things 78 did was it sparked a whole new generation of political leaders, a whole new generation. All the John Y. Hayes, the Jim Shones, the Les, you know, Iharas, Carol Fukunaga, They all came out of that convention. That was their launch pad.
Meaning so, they were delegates to the Constitutional Convention,
yeah,
and then they got inspired to run.
That's right, and they launched their political careers as a result of that. So there's a lot of things. There's things that people would hope. A lot of this depends on whether the cup is half full or half empty. The dark fears run like this. One is a Constitutional Convention in this particular moment of America's mood could easily be hijacked by entrenched local interests or offshore money flooding in via Citizens United. It could erode some. One of the big fears is it would erode some of the gains that seemed that many people felt were made in 78. In other words, they could reduce the Hawaiian capabilities of organizing themselves. It could reignite culture wars. So it really is one of these balancing acts, and I think people are going to have to decide for themselves where they stand on those things.
Somebody has mentioned to me, and I've not talked with anybody in a union about this, somebody's mentioned they think unions in general are against this. Would you understand why that might be, it's true?
Yeah, I haven't talked to them, but I would suspect that they will come out in the next month against this, and they will start to move on these issues. I think there are logical groups that would be against this. Native Hawaiians would say, we don't want to lose any ground.
Except I've talked to some really prominent Native Hawaiians who say they're for a constitutional convention.
It's going to be very interesting. Yeah. If you're a political geek like us, you're going to watch this and see what goes on. I think the unions would be afraid of losing any bargaining power that they have, because they have tremendous bargaining power with the state now in all manner, whether it's the UPW, HGEA, it doesn't matter. And I think they would all be nervous about this and probably saying, we don't want to do this. I think there's some groups that, in my tea leaf reading, I would say, they may be for it. For example, women, millennials, Republicans, and others who are disenfranchised from the current Democratic Party. So it's going to be very interesting to watch this.
Well, you mentioned Republicans. I personally would love to see a two-party state or a multi-party state, because right now we pretty much have a one-party state. And I think the balance is really good. The discussions can be good, but I'm not sure a constitutional convention or changing the Constitution would change that for the Republicans if they don't get more candidates.
Well, there's that. I think that's right. I mean, Republicans are, very small group, and they probably can caucus in a closet in many places. And I don't know that the Constitution can make a big change in that. But if it created term limits, for example, and set in place motions for more turnover and churn, I'm not good at prognosticating that.
Right. Well, I was just thinking, though, you mentioned that some might want to change political subdivisions. My neighbor across the street used to be really firm on that one of the things we don't have in this state are offices that people can run for that have a little less power so they can learn how to legislate. Because right now you go into county council or state house or state senate, and those are big jobs. They're huge. But he was saying, maybe we need to have school boards and on this island we do not have neighborhood boards. They have those on Oahu, but more opportunities for people to be elected and learn how to do those kind of jobs. So that kind of thing could come out.
I think also, at least the way my little thinking about it is, because I've spent years running a lot of public meetings where government agencies are required to go consult with communities, but who do they consult with? So they, is it a public meeting where a few voices dominate or gets hijacked? So imagine you had something at district levels. They would at least have someone to consult with, and they're required to do that consultation. But I've been running interference on those meetings for years, as have you. So we know it's tough.
Well, it is tough. So, Peter Adler, we're almost at the end of our time together. What have I not asked you about that would be important for folks to know as they look at their ballots, which are going to be starting to come in the mail around October 10th or 11th? What should they think about when they look at that constitutional convention question?
I think part of it is one of the veterans of the 78 convention said, these things are a reflection of the mirror of the times. So many of these things that are reforms could be done, set in motion by the legislature, but if they don't do it, is the moment ripe for overriding and, telling the legislature, this is what you got to do? So I think that's the deliberation moment. I actually go by, and I vacillate between the high hopes and dark fears. So I live and die by Woody Allen's philosophy that said, the cup of life is well more than half full, but it may have some arsenic in there.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to say aloha now, but I do have one other question,
sure,
which is this. There are people who might not want to be delegates, but they might want to have some input. Will there be opportunities for them to do that? Will they be able to consult with delegates or tell delegates what they think?
It's a great question. Once the delegates are elected, the decisions on the rules and the procedures rest entirely with the convention. Entirely. So they could create all kinds of mechanisms that allow the public to interact, especially now in a media age, in the internet age. So it's a decision that could be driven by the delegates themselves.
And I guess the same thing would then hold true. If they come out with proposed amendments, let's say there are 10 of them, the convention would decide how to educate people on those amendments?
Yes. And that usually does happen. There's usually some kind of education. But they will appear on the ballot in a fairly short form. It's not going to write the whole, you know, it could be like a paragraph amendment, and it's going to be a short version of it. So people have to study this. This is not one of these things. It's not easy. It's kind of complicated, and people need to kind of burrow into it if they're interested.
Peter Adler, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And of course, the main thank you goes to you, the listeners. If you want to learn more about a constitutional convention, I moderated a forum last Thursday evening with Peter Adler, Chad Blair of Civil Beat, the online newspaper, which has taken a pro position on having a constitutional convention, Leahy Hoy, a Kona attorney who is against having a constitutional convention, and David Tarnas, an environmental planner and consultant out of North Hawaii who calls himself a political science nerd, and he had some impassioned comments about having a constitutional convention, some of the implications. You'll be able to see the video at Naleo TV and at naleo.tv, also at the website for one of the sponsoring organizations, WestHawaiiForum.com. This is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@lava105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.